G'day, you're listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. My name is Chris Hayton, your host, and the segment we start off with today is not one that I actually considered when starting this podcast. Yes, these topics can be applied to any business across practically any industry, but our episodes and conversations today are essentially tailored and applied to life within a brewery's business. More than just one topic, but I feel they all have an important role to play, and they seem to interrelate and blend into one another, and that is people and culture and training and safety within a brewery and across the greater industry itself. In part one of the segment, I talk with Chief Brewer at Four Pines Brewing Company, Chris Wilcott. Now, Chris has been working within the brewing industry for over 10 years now and is well placed to share his experiences and insights and seeing a small family-run brewery gain growth and momentum into a medium and large-sized one to then eventually being bought out by the big boys, and not just once but twice in his brewing career. In this time, he's gotten to see how the work and team cultures change and adapt, and the challenges a business experiences when it comes to dealing with growth, and how its systems and processes have had to evolve to become more formalized. Chris is also a qualified master brewer, being a past student of the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, and shares further details on the important role the IBD has played in the formal training and development of brewers globally. So I'll leave you to it then. I hope you enjoy my sit-down chat with Chris Wilcock from Four Pines Brewing Company. Well, welcome, Chris, to the Build Me Brewery podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Yeah, well, welcome, Chris, to Four Pines Brewery in Sydney, and really pleased to have you here.
Yeah, well, mate, you gave me more of enough time showing me around all the different parts of the facility. We went to your raw materials area, your grain silo, your packaging line, your brewery floor. It's a pretty, well, like you were saying, a bit of a convoluted setup, but guys have a lot of gear here and are obviously pumping out a lot of beer, I imagine.
Yeah, it's been a 8-year journey for this brewery since I started, almost 9 years now. That we've been operational, and it's changed a lot in that time.
Mm.
A small 500 meter square unit, which houses the whole brewery, including pack line, to taking on multiple units after that, and expanding any way we could during a really rapid phase of growth for Four Pines, which was exciting and scary, but yeah, a really nice functional brewery these days with a few extra tools that we've been able to buy recently. Excited to install and begin playing around with.
Mm. Yeah, well, we'll dive into more about, I guess, the growth phases that you've been involved in not just Four Pines but also at other breweries that you've been at. And the whole topic of our conversation today is, you know, this is going to form part of the I really don't know what to call it because it's got many titles, but people and culture, training and safety, I guess. So we're really exploring what it takes to run a good work culture and team to become successful, some of the safety aspects. So I guess we're going to try dive into a couple of different topics today. And I think with your background coming from, you know, small breweries to now big ones, you know, you're well placed to sort of share your insights on that with the audience. But before we dive into that, mate, always like to get to know the guests beforehand. So, you know, maybe talk a bit about how you got attracted or what got you into brewing and where you are today being at Four Pines. And yeah, maybe some fun facts about favorite beers, beer styles, breweries, maybe other than Four Pines, if you can dive into those sort of waters, that'd be great.
Yeah, the Chris Wilcock origin story. I guess people often ask me, why did you go into brewing? And the real baseline answer to that is I just bloody love beer.
Easy.
And I always have. I've always had a interest in it and appreciated the product and a curiosity about it. So I actually graduated university with a science degree. I was a molecular biologist, which is basically somebody who knows a bit about genetics.
Yep.
And I was working in a medical research lab out of uni, contemplating doing a PhD, spending some long days in the lab setting up experiments. It was very interesting but slow going research. I was in the meantime, just listening to podcasts and other bits and pieces of interest to get me through my day, and beer became a big theme of what I was starting to explore. I guess that took me into some home brewing, playing around with beer at home, working out how it was made. And it was actually a trip, a convention that I went to attend, a genetics convention over in in Fremantle in Western Australia. And I was nodding off in the seminars, just kind of tired of the genetics lectures going on all day, and saw that Little Creatures Brewery across the road, thinking I've just got to go check it out. And it ended up being a place where I spent a lot of the week, and had some beers that blew my mind. And through opportunity, I was actually asking around about getting into the industry, and my then girlfriend, now wife's stepmother, was good friends with Bruce Peachy, who was the head brewer at the time at the Blue Tongue Brewery in Newcastle. Gave Bruce a call. He said, come up, check it out. There's a job here if you want to have a go. And I thought it was a pretty low stakes move, and if I didn't love it, I could always revert back. So moved to Newcastle and started working for Blue Tongue. Started off as a brewer, doing all aspects of brewing back then. First of all, you got to obviously come in, sweep the floors.
Yep.
Learn to warehouse, move things around with a forklift, be generally useful.
All the dream crusher roles, I've been led to believe. Yeah.
The dream crusher roles, that's right. And, yeah, I wasn't really, I guess, aware of what I was up for at that time. Barely knew how to work a spanner. Wasn't very mechanical, very science-orientated and quite curious about that side of things, but awesome to pick up things like running a bottling line, running a filter, and then eventually running the brew house as part of the brew team up there. Eventually became the quality manager, and through a bunch of mergers and acquisitions, Blue Tongue was taken over by a joint venture between Coca-Cola and SAB Miller. And we built a new $150 million brewing site on the Central Coast, a place called Warnervale, which was a massive project and an awesome thing to be part of. I was actually in charge of setting up the laboratory there. It was something like a $2 million laboratory, and you know, I was in charge of getting everything running from our beers in spec to getting the yeast healthy and our propagations right, and learn a lot doing that. Part of that brewery was to run not just our local Blue Tongue brands, which were kind of boutique beers at the time. They were journeying into that craft space. We had some nice dry hop beers and some American late hop pilsners, which were really nice beers, a ginger beer. And also we were tasked with bringing some international brands and brewing them locally. So Peroni, Miller and Grolsch were all things that we had to convince their respective head brewers over in the foreign lands that we could brew to a standard and well enough for distribution and sale in Australia. So that learning curve was massive, and the opportunity to be part of that was awesome. And through it all, I was studying brewing alongside. My method of choice was to use the IBD, and through the IBD and networks around Sydney, people at breweries like Tui's, all the suppliers locally, experienced people I've met along the way like Bruce, I went all the way through to the level of master brewer with the IBD. And basically left Blue Tongue in the end just because I wanted to get back to the craft space, and having a chat with the guys who were starting Four Pines and building a brewery down here in Brookvale. Sydney was my hometown. Was an opportunity I just had to jump at.
Mm. I mean, you've come full circle twice now, haven't you? I think the way we were talking offline, yeah. It's yeah. Being part of that Blue Tongue sort of culture, growing and then getting bored out and then doing it all again at Four Points.
It's funny. Even at Blue Tongue, I think there was four separate acquisitions in the 5 years that I was there. And to come back to Four Pines and be firstly acquired by CUB under AB InBev, which is a massive global company, and then to see AB InBev be bought out by Asahi, I just feel like acquisitions and mergers are part of the DNA for my brewing career.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting. A lot of different cultures and perspectives from each of those owners, from small family owners to really aggressive, large international owners to, you know, quite conservative corporate companies that are very risk averse. All different perspectives and different ways of looking at things, which you can really extract, I guess, values and different values and different learnings from.
Mm. And if you were knocking off on a Friday afternoon and, you know, didn't have any beer in the fridge, go to your local bottle shop, maybe not the tap room downstairs, but, you know, what would you normally grab out of the fridge and take home? What's your sort of preferred or go-to beer style or beer?
I love all styles of beer. You know, that's the cop-out answer. I would love a fresh hoppy style if I can on a Friday afternoon. Nothing better than having a really bold double IPA that warms you as it goes down. For me personally, in terms of the breweries I go after, I just love seeing the Sydney brewing scene as vibrant as it is these days. There's so many good brewers around and breweries. And I really do feel, I think, a bit of loyalty to New South Wales. Guys like DJ at Mountain Culture, Dennis at White Bay, they were both briefly on the Northern Beaches in their career, brewing careers in Australia. I've always appreciated their beers. All the breweries in the Inner West making some great stuff. And really, I think, challenging and supporting each other to be better. And we've got some great brewers here in Brookvale as well. Mm. So find it hard to go wrong.
Yeah. Well, the two people that you mentioned there, they're all originated from Modus, didn't they? Now they've gone off and done their own thing now.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, they were both, I guess, alumni of Modus here and prior to that, Oscar Blues in the US. And that's something I really enjoy seeing as well. We've had, 9 years of operation here at Brookvale. A lot of brewers have come and joined our teams and have gone there on their journey afterwards. And I think, you know, it's really pleasing to see people that I've worked with along the way making different beers and great beers in a variety of roles around the country as well. That, I think, the experience of drinking local beer and the appreciation of all those things, the people and the passion that goes into those beers makes me happy when it's going down the throat.
Mm.
The other big one I've always had an appreciation for, and when I was part of Blue Tongue, I actually got the opportunity to go over to Italy to get the brand franchise license signed off for the first Peroni to be sold by a local brewery made in Australia. It was basically in order to be able to make the Italian product in Australia. So they asked me, Chris, have you got your passport? I said, yep. They said, we've got 30,000 cartons in the shed. We need you to go to Italy tomorrow. We'll fly your business class to get them signed off by the Italians because we need to sell them. And I jumped on a plane, not much on me apart from 3 cartons of beer. And
you didn't get pulled up by customs. That's over the limit, isn't it?
I paid a lot for extra baggage, but no, didn't get pulled up. Got greeted at the airport in Italy by some of the Peroni breweries, their brewmaster, a guy called Claudio, and I've always had a soft spot for Peroni. The brewery and the, I guess, tradition around the way that they approach beer in a really cool Roman style was always something that I appreciated being part of and getting to see.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so there's a lot of background and a lot of, I guess, moments to sort of look back on and where you've come today, like running all the production here at Four Pines, I guess. And that's why I wanted to get you on. I think you're really well placed to share with us about that topic on growth and culture. And I'd love to probably even have you on at a later date talking about other topics because we could probably talk for hours. And it was actually, I think it was the IBD presentation you did on this topic. Well, small to medium, I think was the title of it. And yeah, it was really well received. And I guess wanted to share some of those insights with my audience, especially those looking at starting breweries or even those that are, you know, maybe starting to see a bit of growth and are starting to, I guess, get a taste of some of those challenges when it comes to scaling up and growing and what they should know. So, but diving into, I guess, some of our more heavier content on the topic, we've obviously established that you've come from two big breweries, seen them come from small, then grow into medium and large operations. So I guess wanted you to share some insights with the audience about what brewery owners need to be considering when it comes to when you're scaling up your operations. I imagine you'd have to look at staffing numbers, you know, what the work culture's like, setting up teams. Are those teams talking to each other? How are they communicating? And I guess implementing some of the more formal systems that go with a bigger operation. Like, you know, if you 2-3 man band operation, you're doing stuff on the fly. It's very cowboy brewing, you know. As someone's starting to scale up, what are some of the things that they should be considering?
Sure. Well, firstly, I can't say that everything that I speak about is actually my idea, or I have to give credit to the many people that I've worked with that have helped me in these growing businesses and that I've seen do fantastic things. The guys who started Four Pines, for example, were very cognizant of the challenges of growing a business past a small group of people in the early days, and put a lot of specific initiatives in place to make sure that we perpetuated what Four Pines was about, and that DNA survived. But in terms of when your brew team is starting to grow, I think there's two aspects to this. What's happening when your brew team's growing and what's happening when your company's growing. Speaking specifically from the brew team point of things, firstly, you may start off running a brewery. You're up and down the brew stairs running the mash tun. You understand the small detail of what's going on in each of your tanks, what processes are happening day to day, what you need to keep an eye on. So the first step there, I think, is that quickly becomes a lot to do, especially if you're trying to manage the rest of the business on your side, on the side. So you may start to consider hiring new people in to help you with some of those tasks, and they may be initially just the dream crusher tasks to allow you to focus on the more skilled aspects of the process. Eventually, you may be relying on them, and you probably will be relying on them to manage some tasks that are pretty crucial to the brewing process. That might even be as simple as filling a keg, having confidence that that person is properly sanitizing and cleaning the kegs, particularly if it's a manual operation, which ours was at the beginning. It wasn't easy just to have somebody come in and show them a process and then walk away trusting that every keg had been done properly. Some tools that you might, I guess, consider there, and I think some considerations that you need to have at that stage. The first one is, if it's beyond you at working your brewery, I think you really want to have just an understanding of safety. You want to make sure that the environment you're bringing any employees in the brewery in is one that is either as safe as possible for them to work in, or they are aware of all the hazards and you can trust that they have all the tools to operate the equipment and the brewery safety. So it really is the responsibility of the senior brewer and the company owner to make sure that that environment is provided to any employee in the brewery. You may choose to bring in somebody with experience, which is great. Often that will mean that they're aware of some of the safety risks. That means they may be familiar with running some of the processes. That is good in itself, but it also can bring bad habits, and it can also bring, I guess, something else that you have to become comfortable with, is that they may have a different way of doing things that may be different to the way that you would like it to be done or the way that you think it should be done. So hiring a person is important, and hiring those first few people in your brewery can be a challenge. The tools that might help you in managing that is being really clear on what tasks that you would like them to do, writing things like standard operating procedures so that you can be confident that they are doing things a way that's safe and a way that is going to give you confidence around the quality of your beer. It's also important, I think, at that stage to appreciate that people aren't robots and that mistakes will happen, just as I'm sure every brewer experienced or in whatever level of experience is prone to making the occasional mistakes. My advice at that stage is you have to be prepared to work with that person in identifying and supporting them through whatever learning process that they're going to go through. So a key thing that we feel that allows us to control quality as we're bringing on new staff is to really opt for transparency. If anything goes wrong in any process, we want to know about it. We don't want somebody to feel so guilty, so scared about their role and the repercussions that they wouldn't tell us about it. Firstly, that means that we've got a chance to identify it and fix it. Secondly, that means that we can work with them so that they own the mistake, they can help us deal with the consequences, and it becomes a learning and progression part of that for them. And I think really a lot of young brewers, particularly inexperienced brewers that might come into breweries, really appreciate that, and it's a way to get them that on-the-job training and on-the-job experience more quickly rather than, I guess, not allowing them to step outside of, not allowing them any leeway to make a mistake or try new and learn new procedures, for example. Those are all tools that we can use when bringing new people into the brewery. And I think that exploitation piece and that the robot piece is another one that we find has a second side to it, in that if you can make people feel part of the brewery, make them feel like they are progressing in terms of their influence on the beers and their confidence in making the beers, you start to get this ripple effect and avalanche effect where their confidence starts to breed new creativity in the processes. They might think of a way to do something slightly more efficiently, more quickly. They might think of a way to perform a process better, improve one aspect of the dry hopping, for example, or move beer from A to B with less oxygen pickup. They might pick up a small part of your process that you were blind to. And then I think that's the start of a genesis of a team where you've got different people all contributing in their own way, using their own decisions and their own skills to create something that's bigger than just what one brewer can do, no matter how good that brewer is. And that's really the approach that we try to take to team building long term, and that's our long term strategy, rather than getting people in, giving them an SOP and saying, this is your job, do it. And if you stuff up or can't do it, then there's consequences. We prefer to try to unlock the power of a team by knowing that everyone and appreciating that everyone brings in new skills, new passion, new set of eyes, a new life experience. And if we can start to give them confidence in unlocking that, then the brewery will ultimately be better for it and the beers.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting you mention about staff departments doing different other departments' jobs for a day or so. We mentioned it before where, just make sure that everyone's understanding everyone's roles. And, I think it comes down to, if you're experiencing staff turnover, your head brewer gets poached by someone else. All that information and, about how to do a key part of the business is making the beer goes with it. And I guess making sure someone can come in there quick, smart,
yep,
to sort of fill the role. So I guess that's important.
Yeah. I mean, succession planning is important. We've often had people come through the brewery, get a lot of experience here, prove themselves to be great brewers, and then get offered great opportunities elsewhere. We've had people have to move away from the brewery for family reasons, for financial reasons, or, onto a different industry altogether. We like to accept that as part of a healthy brewery ecosystem, in that people will move on to new stages of their life, and that's, we want people to be here and progressing and feel that Four Pines is part of their experience, journey, their experience, rather than place that they are going to, I guess, just call a job. I go there, I get paid, and I leave, and I get nothing else from it. So succession becomes important. So maybe what that might influence in a brewery, for us, we tend to use less casual labor if we can avoid it these days. Try to give people the security of a full-time job. It might be that we bring them in as a casual early doors or as an intern who's after experience. But we try to identify quickly who's really a good fit for the brewery. And if they are, we'll do everything we can to find a full-time position for them. If we got them full-time, then I guess they've got confidence that they can continue to grow with the brewery and we can start to build skills into them that are going to fill the gaps of any people that might leave the brewery down the track. Many brewers we've had have been here for more than 5 years as well, so that those types of people who stick around, we've obviously got huge vaults of knowledge and experience, and not just of their experience of brewing, but I think they carry a lot of the DNA of what Four Pines is in coaching the younger guys as well.
Mm. All right. So I guess on talking about, you know, what a brewery owner can do and some of the challenges that they face and, you know, how they can sort of make sure that they're creating a healthy work culture, are you able to give us a bit more specifics on what an owner can be doing to create that, I guess, team camaraderie within a workplace? Because, you know, I imagine that when you're at Blue Tongue, or probably more Four Pines, because you were, you know, there from the more in the beginning stage to when they eventually got bought by CUB. Question for you, was there a bit of hesitancy amongst the workforce with the looming fact that they were going to be bought out by a big corporation? Do you think, you know, was there a time where you just had to manage those feelings of the workforce and how things might change culture-wise?
There was. It'd be a lie to say that there wasn't. I think a lot of what Four Pines employees identified with them at that time was that they were an independent craft brewer, and that was an easy thing to pin ourselves to. So it was a mindset shift. But to give you an idea of how successful I think we, and this is credit to the leaders in the company, the original owners, the Mitchell family, and those who really started up Four Pines and created the DNA that the company is made of. Nobody left within, we had very few people, I think less than 1 or 2% leave the company within that first year following acquisition. So a lot of people, I think, when it was reinforced that everything Four Pines is about, and that was really clearly laid out on what Four Pines is about, was laid out in front of everyone, and they were told that that's going to be protected and that's not going to change. We had a really positive feedback from the company in general, and I think it was delivered on quite well. To CUB and InBev's credit, they had realised that they have bought companies before and tried to whitewash them with their own culture, and had turned into an eventual dissolution of the value of those brands and companies. So we kept doing what we were doing with a little bit of extra money behind us and a little bit of less stress around being a small family-run business that, you know, was vulnerable to cash flow issues, etc. And the partnership, for all intents and purposes, has been a great one. And we ultimately feel that we can teach the bigger company a few things around running business a little bit differently. And obviously we feel that we can learn from them, and we feel that we can work with them. For example, one thing, Four Pines is a B Corp company. I don't know whether you've heard of it.
Yeah, that's relating to sustainability, is it?
Yeah. So I think a few breweries here in Australia have opted to get B Corp certification. It's essentially a standard that you sign up to that delivers on a certain number of criteria in the realms of environment and social sustainability. We signed ourselves up to that prior to being taken over, and we were the first acquired company by a big multinational corporation to maintain that status. So we worked with the B Corp guys through that, and they were happy with the way that we were holding on to those original values.
Mm. Well, are you able to, I guess, dive into some of the things that make a good team culture or a healthy culture?
Yeah, Well, look, the brewing industry, and particularly the craft brewing industry, is so exciting because you do have so many small, vibrant teams, particularly getting a brewery off the ground where you've got maybe originally it might be one-man show, but then it grows into a few departments. You might have a sales guy, a hospitality guy, a few brewers, a operations admin team. In those days, I think you've got all the power in the world of a small team, and the small team is such an effective unit, particularly if you've got people who work well together and kind of have a similar vision of what they want the company to be. You can move mountains with those types of teams, and it really is one of the powers of small craft businesses, and that should be embraced by anyone who's in that position. It gets a bit more tricky when you start going beyond those 15 people. We were 15 when I started at Four Pines. Now we've got 150 plus permanents across our venues and hospitality footprint, as well as brewing, sales, marketing, etc., as well as probably an extra 50 casuals who work mainly in our venues. So keeping a common goal and a common and keeping a team that size pulling in the same direction, that's where the challenges really start. One of the really effective things that the owners did here early days and we nurtured and supported and evolved was we did a cross-departmental day. So I'm sure this is not unfamiliar to many people. We would make sure that when joining the company, a brewer needs to spend a day as a glassie behind the bar or serving behind the bar if he's got his RSA or her RSA. He or she would spend a day on the road with a sales rep, visiting customers, pounding the pavement, if you will, and vice versa, a sales or a hospitality staff member would also spend time in the brewery. And that was a great way just to, I guess, build empathy and appreciation for those upstream or downstream of, or, you know, by your side in the company, particularly when our venue was in Manly and our brewery was in Brookvale and you're not crossing paths every day. Sales rep might be on the road around the country, anywhere. Building from that, I think we now have a pretty solid induction process, which we call School of Beer, which we take all of our staff through. And it's really, I guess, you know, it's a fairly standard process in making sure everybody really understands what Four Pines is about, making sure they get the reverence for beer, making sure the B Corp values are, I guess, appreciated and aligned. And we actually probably go to the effort of standing around a table and talking about who we are as a business and what Four Pines is and wants to be long term. And that's a very handy thing to do, I think, as you're building a business or starting a company, to write that down, the whole mission statement, your culture and values that you want to project as you go. It's a bit of a North Star that you can pin yourself to when it comes to decision making down the track. And it's also something that you can use in firstly picking people who you think are going to be generally appreciative of that and are going to be able to help in that and expand on that, rather than those who may be, for whatever reason, opposed in terms of their value. I mean, it would be difficult, for example, to hire in a brewing facility that does not drink alcohol or has no appreciation for any alcoholic beverages. That might be a difficult fit. It may not be, but I think if your dream is to perpetuate a brewing company, then you might consider that in your hiring.
It's a bit like a vegan wanting to work at an abattoir, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Probably not a good fit.
No. A person with no sense of smell, though, that might be a good fit. And then writing those down, I mean, it's a handy exercise to go through. And not only can you then, I guess, use it as North Star, you know, we can tell the story of who we are to both our employees and then to our partners. And eventually it was a really handy thing to show CUB in understanding this is who we want to be and this is who we'll continue to be and this is why you bought Four Pints. So in the brewery, we try to reward staff. And one of the big things that we're increasingly learning the lesson on, and this is another thing I really want to say, that we've not been perfect the whole time at Four Pines, and a lot of this is learned experience from when we've done things that weren't quite the right way. Well, we've been two heads down producing beer to celebrate the great things that we've done. You know, we've won awards through the years. We've done really successful releases, and at times we haven't thanked our team enough. We've sort of been on to the next big challenge, which is a big part of when you're growing. Sometimes you just look at the horizon and it's just more work. So rewards and celebration are something that we increasingly have brought into our employee mantra, and particularly in the brewery, the way that we are able to do that is we've got a really clear progression system for young people or experienced people entering the brew team. If we hire them with very little experience, we offer them incentives and rewards for mastering certain processes, being signed off to be able to, as competent at processes, and then sponsoring them through programs like the Cicerone Beer Server Program or the IBD General Certificate. If they can reach a certain number of attributes along that progression scale, we'll bump them up to a brewer position. So from assistant brewer to a brewer, or from an assistant pack tech to a what we call pack wolf, which comes with new role responsibilities, new challenges, as well as a bump in salary quite often. So that's something that we trying to set out a clear path from effort to reward, so that I think we're appreciating as brewers are growing with us. Then we also have employee programs. We've got a lot of employee programs here at Four Pines, ranging from just free beer through various formats, half-price meals at our pubs. We do a program called Four Pines PhD, which is essentially a reward for a tenure at certain points along a person's tenure at the company. They'll unlock rewards like pretty much a three-day junket down at the AIBA Awards and GABS in Melbourne, all the way through to a trip over to America to see the World Beer Cup presentations and the Craft Brewing Conference over there, as well as, you know, basically brewery tours and a US experience tour.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
So, and for the brew team, we love just short-term incentive goals as well. You know, some of the best things you can do, and particularly when you're doing shift work like we are at the moment, it's really easy to develop, I guess, small dividing lines between, say, the brew team or the pack team or across shift lines. The important thing for us to do is make a lot of our targets. We may say, if we can get below X grams of CO2 usage per hectolitre, which is part of our sustainability goals, let's reward ourselves and pat ourselves on the back as a brew team. We've done things like going paintballing or going on a brewery tour of the Inner West or just having a big long lunch somewhere. It also gets the whole team together, which we do regardless. Every 6 weeks or so, we always make sure we have a big team lunch and a big team communication session, just to make sure that we all realise that as frustrated as we sometimes can get when the pressure's on, in the end of the day, we're all one team. We all want to be pulling together and, you know, appreciate all the good things we do for each other rather than, you know, focusing on those little negative things that can creep in when you're feeling like you're not having the reward for all of your work.
So how long do you have to be employed to be able to go over to America?
At the moment, 7 years.
Ah, shit.
So I got to go last year, actually.
Oh, nice.
Just before COVID, luckily.
Oh, yes. Sneaked in just in time.
Yeah. I'm getting old. That tour was a tough slog on the liver.
Which, if you don't mind me asking, what sort of areas were you going for the tour?
So last year late 2019, we went to LA initially. Checked out some breweries around there, part of AB InBev at the time. So Golden Road Brewery in LA, we checked out some local breweries like the Firestone Walker site. Some local experiences.
Sierra Nevada's in California, isn't it? Is it California?
California, yeah. Yeah.
So that's
I've
the
been
state,
there on a
yeah.
previous trip. Great, yeah. Great part of the world. Up near the Napa Valley where you've got...
Chico, isn't it? That's the
yeah,
area.
It's in Chico.
Yeah.
Russian River and
yep.
Lagunitas are all up in that general direction as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic. I'd love to do that. I would love to do that. I think it would give me even greater insights about this whole brewery thing. I've heard so many people come on the show say that they got, I guess, attracted or fell in love with the craft beer scene here in Australia because of a backpacking trip around Europe or, you know, around the States, and that's where they drew inspiration from. And, yeah, I'd love to do that sometime if travel ever becomes a thing again.
It's worthwhile. And the American beer scene is so large and so diverse these days that you've got just a complete – suite of options to absorb in Europe equally. Some of my favorite beers, and I had the opportunity to go there recently, but Belgium, just the way that they do and the crazy things they do with beer that not really often talked about, but when you actually visit their breweries and watch their processes, a completely innovative and a different way of approaching ingredients. I went to the brewery that brews Triple Carmelite, as well as Deus, the champagne style.
Oh, wow.
Beer brewed with the Méthode Champenoise, as well as Quok. And each of those brewers had their own crazy methods, that completely unconventional way of thinking about brewing, but all completely unique and delicious.
Well, it's got a bit of historical type leaning, doesn't it? Because they haven't really changed some of their brewing methods since hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So.
No, exactly. They're very much the anti-Germans in that way. There's no rules.
Mm. Yeah, no, I've mentioned it many times on the podcast so far that, yeah, it is a bit of a gap in my learning, that the Belgian-style beers, and it's something that I'd love to learn more about and just getting access to it. I mean, you've got to go to the real boutique-y kind of bottle shops over here to really get a taste of some of the – I mean, and once again, you're talking about the distribution taste of it, you know what I mean? It'd be amazing to taste it fresh out of the barrels or the fermenters over in Belgium. So
certainly. Yeah, and it pervades a lot of the Four Pines brewing philosophy, actually. When we started, the European and all the different styles out of Europe were really a far bigger part of the craft beer scene. And I think we grew up on it, the head brewer at Manly, Andrew and I. Particularly have fond memories of brewing those types of styles. More recently, people have really followed what the US have done, and the customers have followed them as well, so there's an absolute reason for doing so. But the appreciation of all those historical brewing areas in Europe is something that we still try to keep as a small piece of the way that Four Pines does beers. You know, we've got our traditional Irish stout. Still part of our core range is the Hefeweizen and an ESB that comes out seasonably that is just an absolute fan favourite with a lot of the expats that we welcome through our brew pub in Manly.
Mm, yeah, brilliant. Well, I guess a slight deviation from our topic on people and culture is training as well, because you're actually quite involved with the IBD, so the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, you know, as well as being a previous student, as you mentioned, doing your master qualification through them. Are you able to tell us a bit about your involvement with the IBD and their role in the industry in regards to training?
Yeah. For those who don't know, the IBD, the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, has been around for a long time. It's a UK-based institution, but it has big chapters globally, pretty much everywhere except the US these days. The US tends to have their own sort of Master Brewers Association and the American Society of Brewing Chemists. The IBD, though, really was the premier brewing training course in Australia for many, many years through the 80s, 90s. A lot of the big breweries globally recognize the IBD training almost ubiquitously. And that was the way that I kicked off my search for additional brewing technical knowledge. There's other good things to access these days, more so than there was when I was kicking off my learning. Things like the TAFE course and Ballarat even. Is that still going?
Yeah, I think so, yep. Yeah.
But beyond the training, the IBD is a great technical network. So it's brought me to events where I could have a beer with the head brewer at TUI's or the head brewer at CUB Abbotsford or the lead engineer for CUB Technical, for example. And those are fantastic, fascinating people to meet as well. As much as we may on industry and company lines in the craft beer world, I can't speak of that any longer, but rightfully or wrongfully see that as a barrier. I think particularly on the brewing side of things, where it's not so much a battle fought across brands and shelf space, there's a group of technical brewers within those big companies that are a huge resource, big fans of beer in their own right, big fans of craft beer, who are more than happy to share decades of industry knowledge, and who, if you sit there and listen to, can pretty much tell you they've forgotten more than you know about brewing. So IBD is a network, and it's a technical network. It's not affiliated with big brewers or small brewers. It includes the distilling industry, which is a really emerging, amazing story within Australian, I guess, alcohol manufacturing at the moment. It's a great way to connect with like-minded people if you want to know more or want to expand your world in the technical space. It's also a great place that you can get recognised qualifications for brewing and distilling, and they are online courses which have their pros and cons, but it's certainly if you're working in a brewery and you're doing the practical aspect in the day-to-day, that can be a really effective way of boosting the pace of your learning as you're working day-to-day.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm starting to establish in my own mind, because, you know, obviously being a student of the TAFE New South Wales microbrewing course, the reason I like that course so far is the amount of practical componentry in it. You know, going out and, you know, I'm going to be coming here in a couple of months' time doing a full day with your brew team and, you know, and other breweries around Sydney. And so for those that aren't working in the industry, it sounds like a great gateway into that, where things like, I guess, the IBD and the like Siebel as well, there's a lot of specialization in some of the courses there, and to further your learning, because I feel like if you're just learning online, you know, taking in all the theory, it might be testing and analyzing and quality, and, you know, it doesn't really, well, for me, the way I learn, it doesn't truly sink in until I actually put it into practice. Sure. So, but I can see the IBD and Siebel being so important on that advanced learning, and where the TAFE one is more of a grounding, you know what I mean, I find.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm speaking out of turn, and I think they all play a role in the way training's set up currently for Australian brewers.
I don't think you're speaking out of turn at all. I think definitely different people will learn in different ways, and the IBD is one path. If you really want to dive into the deep technical aspects of brewing, and I'm talking, you know, if you want to go to the diploma level, the engineering behind refrigeration, the malt enzymatic pathways, etc., which can give you some real great fundamental knowledge in running a brewery, then the IBD is probably the premier way and the most recognised way has traditionally been in Australia. And that's the way I went.
Yeah.
It was a hard slog, I'm not going to lie. It's not an easy qualification to achieve, but I certainly know that anybody who's got any of those qualifications has done a pretty hard slog to get there.
Yeah, brilliant. Diving into some industry insights, always like to hear from people. There's a growing theme, probably a few themes that seem to be developing about, you know, the direction of where craft beer is in Australia, as well as beer trends. But maybe to start this part off, mate, love to just get your thoughts on, I guess, current state of the industry, as well as where you see it, you know, maybe in the next 5 to 10 years, if you're able to share some comments on that.
Well, firstly, and I can't probably say this enough, is I think Sydney is almost, you know, coming to the forefront of craft beer in Australia. I love to see that happening. I love to see...
The Southeast Queenslanders will beg to differ.
I know.
But I'm a Sydney boy as well, so I'm going to back you there.
So I will say it, that I love to see what has traditionally been a pretty hard market for craft beer. I have so much vibrancy and so much quality. I think people will continue more and more to get behind local beer. I think that's an obvious industry trend. We've seen it for a long time that the lines between craft beer and beer are sort of gradually blurring as I think craft beer becomes more mature and probably a bit more self-confident in saying we don't just have to define ourselves as ales versus lagers as we once did. You know, all of those things that were once considered big brewery only, such as centrifuges, cans, flash pasteurizers, are sort of now very acceptable in the craft brewing industry, and I think it shows the, I guess, talent and the technical progression and the complexity that is now involved in craft beer, which is great to see. So I think craft beer will continue to grow. I think it will evolve into something that becomes more and more part of a area's DNA, and it will probably evolve into more and more approachable styles, which I think is a good thing. A lot of breweries these days will have a lager offering or a mid-strength hoppy ale or something along those lines. I think it's still got a lot of challenges in the industry, though. We want to make sure that over the next 10 years we don't get usurped by new trends like craft distillers. Seltzers are going to be a bit of a battleground that I know a lot of craft brewers are beginning to fight into. So we don't want to rest on our laurels, and I think that's where having a real identity of who you want to be and what you want to project as a company through having a strong culture can really help you make sure you're establishing the right plans for your business or you know your beers over the long term. Here at Four Pines, yeah, we've actually got a really successful RTD range. So beyond my wildest imaginations, the original ginger beer that I used to brew at Blue Tongue turned into creating something in a different way, in a different category here at Four Pines that's grown into a really large and successful product for us. And our Brookvale Union brand of sort of pre-mixed spirits is, I guess, throwing me into the world of flavors and you know other types of alcoholic carbonated beverages. So I'm sure a lot of other businesses will similarly seek to diversify and use all of their knowledge, skills, infrastructure to keep bringing consumers what they're after.
Yeah, and it's a good point you bring up about some of that equipment like the centrifuges and the pasteurization capabilities that craft now has access to. And I think it's not just that, yes, there's been a technical leap in craft beer, people understanding that, but it's also become more affordable as well. You know, these sort of bits of equipment, like you gave me a tour of the factory, and yes, you have that benefit of having, you know, some of the big boys sort of wallet power to sort of have that kegging machine you showed me. Like, gosh, it bloody looks like something that makes bloody Terminators or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I guess, as you say, craft growing is beer quality is going to be under more scrutiny. The consumer's getting more and more educated. You know, we've had people on like Diarmid from Endeavour talking about distribution and quality that they tend to, you know, there's a bit of a microscope on craft, especially with that ABV blowout up in Queensland. But I guess the point I'm trying to drive home is that small breweries can access things like hop rockets to get that aroma in their beer that maybe, you know, your Sierra Nevadas and all that have been able to do for decades, and send their beer potentially over into markets like China because pasteurization is possible. Like I think East Coast Canning, Chris Kelly's team, they offer that as part of their service. They can pasteurize before it goes into packaging. So it's just it's interesting to see the direction of the craft beer scene, I guess. So
Yeah, there's certainly still lots of opportunity out there for craft brewers and craft breweries. So excited to see it.
Yeah.
That kegging machine is certainly cost a few chiropractors some business. That's
it's been yeah, a really I can
nice
imagine.
Addition. That's the one that I always point to when I say that nice corporate money really got us over the line. Is we've gone from that back-breaking work of 1,000 kegs in a week to being able to just line them up nicely on this machine that runs them around in a pretty carousel and gives them to you a nice full keg of beer.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing I had on my list here to ask is, I think it was maybe Neil Cameron mentioned, he doesn't believe that there's going to be many more big buyouts in terms of breweries getting bought out, like one of the more recent ones, or Two Birds coming under Stone and Wood's banner under
Fermentum.
I was going to say Fermentus there, but Fermentum. Obviously, that's still within that independent craft type banner, but Bolter getting bought out. Do you foresee much of that happening in the future? Craft breweries getting bought out by the big boys?
Look, I think mergers and acquisitions will always be part of the industry. I think back when I started in the brewing industry, there was a whole bunch of consolidation. All the big breweries were just closing down breweries. And then 10 years later, there's more breweries than ever. Look, I'm sure there won't be an end to that. Those types of industry restructures. I think you're seeing a little bit of an emergence of craft breweries banding together, either under a new umbrella company or partnering in different ways. So it'd probably be a continued movement in that space. I can't speak for any one company's strategy there, but as long as craft brewers are being successful, as long as they've got great customer prospects and I guess connecting with their company and generating revenue, there will be appetite for good businesses.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, coming towards the end of our chat, and I really do appreciate you being a good host out here, mate, and it was great to see the facility and all the different working parts. But any closing thoughts or advice you'd like to leave our audience about our chat regarding culture and training or just brewing in general?
Yeah, well, firstly, absolute pleasure to have you here and really interesting to hear your series progress. I think it's a really, I guess, great catalogue of where New South Wales brewing is at the moment and a really vibrant look at a really successful industry. In terms of closing thoughts, I think I'd like to leave with just some optimism. You know, it's always really tough to engage with the prospect of starting a craft brewery. I think if you look under the hood too much, and you've admitted this yourself, there's too many reasons not to start one rather than to start one. The real thing I love about the industry and what I've learned to love, maybe even more than love just drinking beers, is that local production and local manufacturing was always a little bit on the nose. Craft beer has shown the value of turning that whole mindset around and showing value of what we can do locally. And I think craft brewers and people in the industry developing those skills and leading the way can almost be the spark that not just reignites a new era for the beer industry, but almost a new era for Australian manufacturing and the way that consumers value products around the way that they were made and the people who made them and what they mean in terms of quality and the quality of product and the value they have for communities. So it's really something that I've appreciated more and more in my 14 years in the industry, and I hope to see that trend continue. So to everyone who jumps in, good on you.
Yeah, great parting words. And like you said, it's easy to be deterred by all the complexities and challenges that one would face starting a brewery. And I've definitely battled with myself internally as to whether or not, but I'm still very much motivated doing it, whether it's going to happen as quick as I first thought. Maybe it's given me a bit of grounding on doing my due diligence before doing it, because it is an expensive exercise to jump into. So, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast have learned from that as well. So I'm glad I've been able to share that experience with everyone, but I appreciate the kind words. Well, before we do sign off, anything worth plugging or mentioning for Pines, maybe some new products, seasonals or shout outs?
Shout out to Four Pines in general for being a great place to work. Keep an eye out for our beers out there. We always love all types of people through the door. And we've been around a while. We brew more than 100 beer styles a year through our three brew pubs and brewery, big Brookvale brewery, around, often accessible around the country. So keep an eye out for us. Follow us on Instagram to see what's popping up. And if you haven't tried Brookvale Union ginger beer or any of the associated products, check that out as well. It's a bit of a fan favourite increasingly around the company here.
Yeah, I haven't tried it. No, I'll maybe have to look out for that. But, thanks again, Chris, for coming on the Build Me a Brewery podcast.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. That was part one of the People and Culture Training and Safety segment. Part two of the segment, I chat with supply chain leader of Stone and Wood and the Greater Fermentum Group, including Fixation and now Two Birds, Richard Crow, and People and Culture Manager Elise Skinner, to discuss an array of topics, also including safety, growth challenges, and what it takes to develop a healthy team and work culture. As always, if you are liking the podcast so far and find the content useful, please give us a follow and rating on whatever platform you are listening on. Also, follow us on all our social media handles, as well as visiting our website, www.buildmeabrewery.com.au. I'll also mention to listeners that we now have a new Build Me a Brewery discussion group linked to our Facebook page. Now, this is a group of keen listeners and like-minded people discussing their brewery build plans and providing advice to others on the subject. Link to this group will be in the episode show notes. That's all for now. I'm Chris Hayton, your host, and this is the Build Me a Brewery podcast.